How highly do you value the internet? What would you be willing to give up in order to stay connected? Well, according to a BCG study, 3/4 of Americans would forgo chocolate and alcohol for a year. A fifth would even abstain from sex. And that study was done a decade ago. High-speed internet is no longer a luxury. It's an essential requirement to every part of our lives. Yet 2 billion people, or 1 in 4 around the globe, don't have any access to the World Wide Web. So how do we close the digital divide? I'm Georgie Frost, and this is the So What from BCG.
Every corporate should be thinking about what is the one action that they could be doing, what is the one goal they can set to really contribute to digital inclusion. Set a goal, take initiative, and measure progress.
Today I'm talking to Vaishali Rastogi, Managing Director and Senior Partner at BCG and Global Leader in Technology, Media and Telecommunications Practice.
I think I can safely say that a decade later, people would give up even more things for the internet. I would say it's no longer just a form of entertainment or a form of connection like it was a decade ago. So many of our daily activities are now done on the internet. Imagine if you didn't have, well, of course, first of all, things like online shopping, but also education, but also things that are so critical in emerging markets as well. Think about telehealth, digital identity, and digital payments that allow transfers to be made to the right segments of population. This is something that is now critical for everyone, first world, but also the entire world, I would say.
Could you put a value on the price of the internet?
I think that would be a hard question. But needless to say, I think it is something that, or should we call it priceless?
And yet we have a digital divide. What exactly is a digital divide? Just explain to us, how many people does it affect, and what's the impact of those people that don't have what you just described? So if it's so valuable, yet a lot of people don't have it.
So the digital divide has been talked about for a long time. And look, the definitions have changed as technologies have changed. But in my simple mind, it just means enabling everyone to leverage the power of the internet to do things that are critical to them and benefit them every single day. Digital inclusion is actually synonymous with social inclusion. And what do I mean? If you just look around you, the entire world is getting connected digitally. So information, communication, education, social well-being, it's all part of our digitally connected lives. And if we just close our eyes and just think about COVID-19 and how it helped us and what would we have done if we didn't have the internet? So when the world went into lockdown, within a short space, some schools at least started operating remotely. Financial institutions could carry on business. But it's not just about work and education. I talked about how digital can be really an enabler to break the barrier between reach and cost and ensure access to health, to finance, to government services for so many different segments of society. This is something that is really impacting, I would say, at least 3 billion people, which is a third of the world's population today. And this is even though 95% of the world's population resides within the range of a mobile network. Well, at least on that front, we've done a good job, or our telcos have done a good job there. But beyond that, there are many other factors that need to be fulfilled, devices, skills, much more. And this will only gather speed. I mean, more and more activities will be done digitally, and I think there is no going back.
I just want to draw out, of that 3 billion figure you're talking about, perhaps a lot of people think, well, this is just a developing nations issue. But it's not, is it?
No, absolutely not. I would say that, of course, the challenge is greater in what we call more developing economies, where, you know, almost 70% of the households are not covered by fixed broadband or don't have the connectivity we need. In middle-income countries, you know, the figure drops. But even in high-income countries, there's almost, I would say, a third or 20 to 30% that really do not have the access they need in the way to fulfill their lives.
I guess the solutions to those would be different. So how would you go about looking to fix this problem, bearing in mind different locations, different geographies, different socioeconomic issues?
Absolutely. First of all, I don't think there's any silver bullet. And there is a lot of different solutions that are needed. And there's a lot of different actors that need to come to the table. I would summarize it as the three A's: accessibility, affordability, and ability. Accessibility means the ability to gain access to the internet. So that means, do you have the infrastructure? Do you have the devices? Are they at the right speeds? But also, do you have all the ancillary elements like electricity access, which is more a developing nation challenge? But then there's affordability, and affordability talks about, do you have the capacity to use the kind of connected digital ecosystem that exists at the speeds that exist? And the last is ability. And by ability, I'm talking about really digital know-how and skills. I'm sure many of us remember that when 4G and smartphones came out, well, at least I certainly do, you know, you have to sit with your mom and say, you know, this is how you do a video call. This is how you do digital payments. And by the way, it's safe and, you know, you don't need to go to the bank. This is how you can access your internet. And it is just fine to do it here, right? And it required skills. And then now if you extend those skills and you talk about other things as well that people need to do online, this is an important component as well. So I would say all three are needed: accessibility, affordability, and ability to drive digital inclusion.
Yeah, because I imagine when people think about the digital divide, they think very much developing nations, perhaps very much access, telecommunications, technology, that sort of thing. But I mean, you can have all the technology in the world, but if people don't know how to use it and to use it properly, well, it's as good as useless, isn't it?
We talked about individuals, but you could switch that as well, right? You could switch it to businesses. And when you look at businesses, and I think about the small and medium-sized businesses, they matter because they yet form a bulk of employment, both in the developing markets, but also a fair share in developed nations. And many of them actually are not really very sophisticated digital users in terms of how can they use it for e-commerce, how can they use it for suppliers, how can they use it for productivity. And so, yes, I mean, it's a real challenge, and it's a challenge for individuals in their daily lives, and it's a challenge for individuals in when they are part of small businesses, given that small businesses account for such a large share of employment globally. So absolutely, I think without that, what we call ability to use, I think the best platforms and the best technology is useless.
I'm always surprised, living in, as I do, in the UK, which, you know, let's be honest, we've moved quickly towards getting, you know, high-speed internet, but I live maybe 40 minutes from London. It's a black hole. And sometimes even in London, I'm always surprised that this, given how important it is, and if the pandemic hasn't shown us anything, I don't know how we would have done what we did without the internet during that time. Why more investment and more focus isn't put in this area to making sure developed countries have good high-speed access everywhere? Do you think it's perhaps sort of looked a little bit like, oh, well, it's sort of a first world, not quite essential problem? Do you think we need to change the narrative around the internet?
It does need to be thought of now as something that is absolutely essential. I mean, think about education and supplementary education, even as schools restart. Think about, you know, all the other elements that come into play, like I was talking about livelihoods. So I would say that this is something that we cannot really leave and say, you know what, if it doesn't happen, it is okay. I do believe that digital inclusion is an absolute necessity for people.
For countries and societies. I mean, you've suggested in your research that reducing the digital divide by half over the next 5 years will require $2.1 trillion of investment. That is, as you admit yourself, a dauntingly ambitious goal. Very expensive.
And that, by the way, is the amount that we need to reduce the digital divide by half. So we would take it from 53% that have access to all of this to 80%, but we are not, you know, even getting to the final mile. We do need all different parties to come together here. We need governments, of course, but we need private corporates to come in and contribute. We need nonprofit organizations. It really will take a village to deliver on this task. And I don't think we could just say, let's look at the telcos and let's wait for them to deliver this. I think this is really a societal challenge, not an individual corporate challenge.
Can I drill in, though, to that 2.1 trillion figure? Where's it come from? Where would that spending go?
So first of all, we looked at all three A's, accessibility, affordability, and ability, and we looked at it globally. And we then said, what is the investment we need to reduce the gap in coverage? And when I say coverage, I mean high-speed coverage, because we said 30 Mbps, and that's a technical term, but what is the minimum amount of speed you need to do your daily activities? So we said, how much money is needed to deliver that? Then we said, okay, to access this kind of internet, what kind of device do you need? Because some people do not have this device. And then we said, okay, not just that, how much would it cost as well to access this? And then the last one is what kind of education programs that we need to run to familiarize people, especially in rural areas, with using, you know, really the internet to deliver on their activities. And then we put all this together, and that's where you got the 2 trillion number. We got the 2 trillion number. And as I said, it only gets us to the 80% mark, not the 100% mark.
I mean, it's difficult at the moment when we're calling on people to fight a climate issue as well. And there's lots of figures bandied around about that. And now it seems another figure. What is the business case? Why should privates contribute?
There are a lot of issues that need to be tackled, right? I mean, if you look at the SDG goals, there's a whole host of them. I mean, climate is absolutely front and center, but there are many, many others. But I don't think it's a question of or it's really, for me, a question of and. If you look at digital inclusion, imagine the positive change we can make. You know, we can make sure that kids in remote areas get the supplementary education they receive, and, you know, how education can be transformed. It's about making sure that payment transfers can reach people using digital identity in a timely manner. I mean, there are several countries, I mean, think of Aadhaar in India, that has combined digital identity, banking accounts, as well as, you know, mobile connections to ensure that in Rajasthan, they deliver the cash welfare payments to the women in the family in a targeted and timely way. I mean, medicine can be democratized. Livelihoods can be facilitated in developing markets. So many examples. We have social commerce platforms that allow millions and millions of small sellers to find markets and to be able to sell. So housewives, people in tier two towns can now access the entire country. So, you know, there are so many of them. Meesho in India, GoTo in Indonesia, Facebook commerce, farmers. We attempted something like this many years ago to try and include farmers and bring them the right inputs for their crops, buy produce, but I think the infrastructure was not ready. But if you look at what Olam has done through Jiva, it's really a sophisticated version of what we tried in 2006, where they have taken farmers that are really small farmers, you know, hold very small holdings, have no access to advice that is specific, not general, have no ability to sell their produce at the right price, and have no access to financing if they need money for seeds or other things, mechanization if their crops fail. And that's what they've brought together on a digital platform. So in my mind, just imagine, I mean, these are just a few examples, but just imagine the change that we can make everywhere in the world. And of course, in the first world or in more developed nations, I would say this is really a means to make our lives even more convenient, even more simple, giving us more leisure to do other things that are important for us.
And I also guess for businesses, I mean, you mentioned their access to new consumers, but access to talent as well, which is particularly pertinent at the moment.
The internet can change the way that we provide education to a huge segment of society that isn't able to get it, you know, vocational training, other training, and that unlocks talent as well. Businesses as well. I mean, there are just so many. I guess I could talk more and more about it. But I personally think this can be a game changer if we can make sure that we conquer the digital divide.
On our current path, when will full digital inclusion come? Will it ever?
I don't think I would put a number to it, because I think when we put our minds to it as a society, I think, you know, we can make a lot happen. So I think this really depends on how all of us come together. I mean, there are so many grassroots examples that are happening. We need to just multiply them. So, you know, we worked with the World Economic Forum and UNDP to really set up what we call a digital inclusion navigator to say, you know what, there are hundreds of ideas. We don't need more ideas. What we need is people to really take those ideas and apply them. So we made it available in a curated dynamic form. There are so many other individuals also helping. ITU is helping. There are, you know, corporates that are helping. American Tower has initiatives. Vista has initiatives. I mean, there are hundreds of corporates that are also coming together here. So I think if we can get really the power of the government sector, nonprofit organizations, multilateral organizations, and corporates to come together, I think that, you know, we could safely get to this even in the next by the start of the next decade.
Where do we begin then to change the path? Because it doesn't sound like we're on the current path to full digital inclusion in a speedy manner. So we need, something needs to change and quite quickly. But how do we begin to make that change? Where does the pivot come, globally speaking?
So as I said, digital inclusion, in my mind, is a public-private joint responsibility. And I think every corporate should commit to some aspect of digital inclusion in their broader goals. And it could be anything. It could be on access, it could be on affordability, it could be on skills, it could be services that you provide on top, on anything. And similarly, I think governments need to step in as well, both at the federal level, but at the country level, but also at the state levels. I think we need to set the right incentives, the right investments, provide some of the right subsidies as well to ensure, because not everything is economically viable and possible. And so they play an important role as well. I mean, if I look at Singapore, where I live, the government has done an amazing job in really saying, I want to get the SME sector, which accounts for, I don't know, 2/3 or more of employment here, and said, you know, and they're not very digitally literate and savvy. So they are finding active and targeted ways to really bring them up to speed and raise productivity there. So I think there, it's important to set these goals and to say how each of these actors would contribute in making a real difference.
And how can we make sure that this is done fairly, equitably, morally even?
Georgie, that's a great question. In my mind, I don't know if we would have the perfect answer. I would say that if we can even do it one step at a time, one contribution at a time, that is perfectly fine. Because waiting for the perfect solution, I think that is very hard. Really accepting every grassroots effort, every contribution, you know, makes a difference in my mind. Something that I know doesn't stick well with, you know, really having one universal frame and then everybody contributing to it. But that's the nature of the beast.
What is the expression? Don't let perfect be the enemy of good. You said that this current crisis is an opportunity. You see it as an opportunity.
In a way, COVID did for digital inclusion, I think, what nothing had done before, right? I mean, we've been talking about this, or I have been at least passionate about inclusion for a long time. But, you know, I think people need to experience it themselves to value why it's important for others as well. COVID just taught us, right? I mean, not all jobs could be done remotely, but so much more of our lives went on as normal, thanks to what, you know, the digital ecosystem allowed us to do. Imagine if this pandemic had hit 20 years ago. At most, I would say, less than even 1% of our labor force would have been able to work remotely. So our entire life would have come to a halt. I mean, think about education. Now, we had at this point during the pandemic, at least 200 million students that were able to continue their education. And that's like almost 100 times more than that would have been possible, you know, had this happened earlier. I can go on and on. I mean, think about, you know, providing online shopping and ensuring that vulnerable populations got payment transfers. I think this pandemic just showed us the power of what digital ecosystems can provide us and why digital inclusion is so key. And I think people realize that it's very hard to live without being digitally included. And I think that experience, that individual experience, has become the rallying cry in my mind for creating this change faster than we would have ever done it pre-crisis or pre-pandemic.
Vaishali, can I ask you why this subject is particularly important to you?
Georgie, I really like that question because, you know, digital inclusion is not something that I'm doing because it's part of my work. It means a lot to me. I guess inclusion for me itself has been important in many ways, right? In terms of choosing a career when no one in my family did so as women, or being, you know, a minority when I went to business school, or women in tech, you know, where inclusion is important, or education for women. So inclusion has been important for me in the last 30 years. But today, for me, digital inclusion is something I deeply care about because I do believe that with the right access to digital and digital services, we can really improve people's lives. We can make a real change. And I really want to be part of that journey. So it has special meaning for me beyond just, you know, what I can do in my role.
Vaishali, thank you so much. And thank you for listening. We'd love to know your thoughts. To get in contact, leave us a message at thesowhat@bcg.com. And if you like this podcast, why not hit subscribe and leave a rating wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.